Okay, here we go. We are looking at Ecclesiastes, another interesting lesson. Solomon was just interesting in the way that he, to me, the way that he thought. And is a little different than the rest of what we study. But the name of the lesson is, Why Do I Feel Empty? How Does My Worship Impact My View of Life? And we're going to look at Ecclesiastes 3, 4, and 5 today, verses out of each of those chapters. So in biblical thought, time began at creation, not as an entity in itself. Time wasn't already here. It was nothing. But it was the progression of God's actions in working out His divine purpose is how time began. So I thought, well, let's just go back and refresh ourselves on time and how it began. So in Genesis 1, verses 1 through 5, which we probably could cite by heart, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered the deep waters. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the surface of the waters. Then God said, Let there be light, and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. Then He separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness night. And here's where time, for me, began. And evening passed, and morning came, marking the first day. The very first day. So, it wasn't a day before that. There wasn't anything. You know, it said the earth was formless and empty, and darkness covered it. So it wasn't even there. He formed it, created it, and then He marked time by evening and morning. So He's Lord over time. We as human beings are part of His creation, but we're physically limited by the arrow of time. And it moves through from life to death. So you're born, and then the arrow starts running. And then there's death on the other end. So the in between the arrow is the span of human life. And that's like, you know, there's a beginning and an end, but what matters is what we do in between. Ecclesiastes is a divinely inspired work of candid realism. So Solomon was just being very candid, straightforward, just honest about how real all this is and how we look at it. And it's so simple, you try to make it difficult. Because I read this, and you know, and last week really kind of threw me off, but it's just really, he was just a very basic wealthy man, which he was, right? Right. So the span of human life, according to Solomon and his realism, the reality of it, is that there's good and there's bad. There's pleasure and there's pain, and there's enjoyment and there's frustration in that arrow. And there is plenty of some, and you know, a little of some and a lot of the other. So as believers, we are the wise. We should be wise. We know that God has a good purpose for making it that way, where there's good and there's bad, there's pleasure and there's pain, and there's enjoyment and there's frustration. So what, no matter what comes our way in our arrow of time, our span of human life, we know, as believers, we know. We know that it's for God's good purpose. Because when He started all this, it was a mess. The reason that He decided, you know, He had to right the wrong of sin. And so He came up with His plan. And He knows from the beginning to the end. He knows that in between. He knows when things are going to happen, when people are going to be born, when people are going to be die, when you're going to get sick, when you're going to get well. I mean, it's just, you know, and I don't care how old we get, we got to think that that's awesome. You know, and to me, it just thinking about it, you get overwhelmed, and that we are, when we pray, talking to Him, and that's cool to me. I don't know if it is to y'all, but it is to me. So, all this in between is part of God's plan, and it's working toward His divine purpose, which is eternal life for everybody. I think, in my humble opinion, that's why He hadn't come back yet. Because He created every one of us. That guy that's shooting, the guy that's pimping, you know, all the bad people, all the murderers, the 32 murderers that we've had in this city, you know, that's what's scary, to know that He created them and what the heck happened to them. You know, what caused them to get that way. And I think that that's why He has prolonged it, because He wants all of us. He's given them a chance, because He's the only one that can. Because once He comes, it's done. It's done. So, let's look at our first verses. Time is a Threat is the title. And it's verses, chapter 3, verses 1, and then verse 10 through 14. For everything there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven. And then 10 through 14, I have seen the burden of God. I have seen the burden God has placed on us all. Yet God has made everything beautiful for its own time. He has planted eternity in the human heart. But even so, people cannot see the whole scope of God's work from beginning to end. So I concluded, there is nothing better than to be happy and enjoy ourselves as long as we can. And people should eat and drink and enjoy the fruits of their labor, for these are gifts from God. And I know that whatever God does is final. Nothing can be added to it or taken from it. God's purpose is that people should fear Him. So let's look at those verses. The first eight are, they're an outline of a variety of things which all have a time and a place. And we've heard, I think there's songs written. Seems like I can hear some folk song about a time and a place or something. So while there's a time for everything, God alone is eternal. So He's there forever. And everything else is there for a time. There's a time for everything. And then it's over. Think about your daily schedule for a moment. I know even though you're all retired, you all have some sort of schedule that you keep when you get up and things that you do at certain times of the day. Do you always allow time for God in your day, in your schedule? God's timing is always perfect, but it's completely unknowable by us. And I want to ask you a question. Would you want to know?
No, because we automatically are worriers. If we knew what was coming, mm-hmm. I don't think we could handle it. We have to take it as it comes.
And we would probably do things to prevent, you know, try to prevent getting there, you know. Mm-hmm. If you knew when you were going to pass, or if you knew when this was going to happen, or when you were going to, I mean, it'd be chaos. He knew what He was doing. Time belongs to God, and He provides it for our enjoyment and our use for eternal matters. That's the whole crux of the thing. He created us. He wants us to believe in Him. And when we do, we are obligated to work for His eternity, for others, for all those people that we talk about in here that do bad things. And, you know, I was on the way, we always listen to 92 on the way to church. It has the gospel, you know. John tries to sing real deep, you know. He's hilarious, but he loves it. And there was one in there about, golly, I lost my train of thought now. what was this? It was a song, and it was right along with the lesson, and I can't remember. I shouldn't have mentioned that about John. It made me lose my track. But anyway, moving on. Life is temporary, and the time we are given should be appreciated. We are to value the time that we have as a gift from God, because everything, you know, I don't care how hard we work for whatever we got, if He didn't want us to have it, we wouldn't have got it, you know. I mean, that's all the way down to the clothes on your back. You know what I mean? If He didn't want us to have it, and so the time, He gives us the time. He gives us that span. We don't know how long it is, but He does. He not, that arrow. So we need to value each and every moment. And you know, I think about, this made me think about how hard, and I'm not bragging or anything, but y'all know how difficult it's been, you know, for me at work and stuff, and it hadn't changed. And I think about, golly, you know, this is all time. I'm not getting back. And I, you know, and sometimes is this what He wants me to do in my little span? You know, can I do something a little easier? I need to remember that each moment of that, no matter how difficult it is, because this is part of the frustration part that I've got, you know, that I need to remember that that's part of my time, and I need to make it as valuable as the part that's enjoyable. That's the thing I think that's most important, is you got to make it, the pain, the frustration, the bad stuff, as valuable as the when you're on the upside. Let's look at the next part, chapter 4. True Friends is the title, and it's verses 9 through 12. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. It's interesting verses, isn't it? But it's pretty straightforward and simple as far as Solomon's take on everything. So what can you do with a half a pair of scissors? No. Punch a hole. That's about all you can do, right? That's right. Come on in. Good morning.
I'm sorry we left.
That's quite all right. Y'all come right on in. There's a test at the end.
Yeah.
She didn't hear me. So, a half a pair of scissors. Poke a hole. That's about it. So, but when it's paired with its mate and it's put together properly, there's a whole bunch of stuff you can do with it, right? Cut paper, anything. Whatever you need to do, because that's what it's intended for. So, what are thinking about a pair, you know, because that's what these verses are about. So what are some examples when two people are better than one? I came up with some ones, but I want to see what y'all said. What's in it? You want me to tell you one of mine? Dancing. Dancing. Yeah, it's more fun to dance, you know. A pair's better than one. I thought about traveling. You know, way better than traveling alone. Conversation. You don't want nobody to think you're talking to yourself. Especially if you start answering yourself, you know. And I put lifting things, you know. I was pretty basic with my stuff. So what are some of y'all's ideas on what's better when it's... What are some examples when two people are better than one?
Well, better to have a person living.
Yes.
Two people living together.
Companionship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just like the verses said, if somebody falls, you know, I think about those commercials for the senior citizens, the necklaces you wear. If you fall, you can punch it and they'll come help you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. So let's talk about, so this leads us into friendship. And I was thinking about the class, and I feel like all of y'all probably all have friends that you rely on and family members. But let's talk about the qualities of a friend. What are some qualities that you would want in a friend?
Someone you can count on.
Mm-hmm.
Love.
Trust, yep. Be nice. Mm-hmm. Honest.
I was supposed to say be honest.
Yep, be honest. Yeah. So we all know that true blessings or true friends are a blessing from God, right? So one of the things that it suggested in my material was when you talk about the qualities of a friend, now think about yourself. Because, you know, if you're going to have a friend, what do you got to do to that? You got to be back, you got to be a friend back. That's right. So if you were to advertise yourself in the want ads as a friend, what would you put about yourself?
I'm honest.
Trustworthy. Loyal.
Caring.
Caring, yeah. Well, good. Because two people working on anything produce more than one. And if you read further in here, it talks about, two laborers that work are going to make more money because they're going to produce more. True friends can help in physical, emotional, and spiritual emergencies. It's nice to know that you got somebody to go to for either one of those or all three. Because it's not always about I've fallen and can you help me get up, but you know, you might have fallen in your spiritual walk and you need somebody to encourage you and things like that, and emotional. Friends can help each other survive nature's challenges. I guess that would be like the weather. I thought about like the power going out and things like that. You know, can I come stay with you because my refrigerator's broke or whatever. So, and also, talking about what we were talking about earlier, there's safety in numbers. Victims of crime are usually chosen because they are alone. That goes back to my stepbrother. You know, he could have been a victim, but he turned the tables, but that couldn't have worked out for him either. You know, you don't ever know. What does it mean to be a friend of Jesus? Do you consider yourself a friend of Jesus? Is everybody going to nod yes? Let's see that. All right. So, what are the benefits of being a friend of Jesus?
He takes care of us.
He does, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Eternal life.
He's loyal. He's faithful.
And that's right. He's honest. He's trustworthy. That's right. All those. I was my boss had a last week. He said, I got to leave early. He said, I got a friend that's in the hospital, and he's expecting to die, you know. So he said, I'm going to try to go see him before he passes. So he left. And so Friday, he told us before he left that he said, I'm not going to be here Monday because he said, I've been asked to be a pallbearer and sing at the guy's funeral. And I said, oh, your friend passed. And I said, did you make it to the hospital? And he said, no. He said, when I got to the hospital, and then he told us who he was. They've been going to church. My boss is a deacon, and this guy was a deacon. And they were also, their families were like pew partners. You know how you just tend to sit with the same. And they've all, for the last 17, 18 years, they'd watched their children grow up. And, you know, they were just friends, good friends. And this guy was a little bit older than my boss. And So he had polio, and he had to be in a wheelchair all the time. And so, he was a preacher at some time, and not at this church, but at another church. And he said I guess he preached at Jimmy's church too, but he would always preach from his wheelchair, you know, and just a great man. But he had issues, health issues related to years of polio, you know, and he passed. But he said when he got there, the guy's wife was coming out. You know, and he said she had the biggest smile on her face. I'm gonna cry now, and I cried when Jimmy was telling us. but he said, and he hugged her, and he said it's too late, isn't it? And she said, yeah, but you know what? He said, well, how are you doing? She said, I'm fine, because she called his name. I can't remember what his name was, and she said, because you know what? He's dancing. She said he got his legs back today, just a few minutes ago. And he said, and then Jimmy said, you know, and when I cried, he got teary-eyed. But talking about the hope. I know, it was so.
That's our faith.
That's right.
That's faith.
And he said, you know what? He said, and I got a feeling there's a little girl that just started working with us, another, she's going to help me. Because the other one moved to another job in the plant, you know, so she's new to, and I'm not sure, she's young, and I don't really know if she's a believer, you know, and so hearing conversations like that is a great witness, you know, and so I said, isn't it wonderful the hope that we have, you know, and the just knowing that you don't have to go, oh my God, why did this happen? Why did he take him? You know, what did we do wrong? And you know how people can be. But just to say, you know, he had his legs back and he was dancing and talking to Jesus, you know. So that was good. And I hope it was a good witness for her. So, because I got a feeling I might have an opportunity there, you know, but I got to take it slow. So anyway, that I thought that was great. That showed a friendship, you know, between the two men and then the families and just the hope that we have, that we know that in between that timeline, but when the end comes, it's there. But we know where we're going. You know, we don't have to worry about it. So anyway, so we are under God is the source of all blessings, temporal and spiritual. We are Christian. We as Christians are under obligation to serve Him, because I've told y'all for years we have a job. Even though you're retired, your job does not end being a witness for Jesus. And you can. That was what the song. If you can't do any, I knew it'd come back to me. If you can't do anything. If you can't teach Sunday, he was singing, if you can't teach Sunday school, if you can't be a preacher, there's one thing you can always do, and that's pray and be a witness. And I know this is a praying class. So we are under obligation to serve Him with our time, our talents, and any material possessions we have, because they don't really belong to us, they belong to Him. These things have been given to us by God to use for His glory and His glory only. So that's what we have to remember as we go about in our timeline, in our little arrow, is that anything that we do, it has to be, think about, you know, is this for the glory of God or is this for me, you know, my glory? All right, let's look at Ecclesiastes 5:1-7. As you enter the house of God, I love this. I love my translation. As you enter the house of God, keep your ears open and your mouth shut.
Amen.
You know, you know, because that's what I'm talking about with these verses and with what's in Solomon. It's candid realism. It's just in your face. This is the way it is. As you enter the house of God, keep your ears open and your mouth shut. It is evil to make mindless offerings to God. Don't make rash promises and don't be hasty in bringing matters before God. After all, God is in heaven and you are here on earth, so let your words be few. Too much activity gives you restless dreams. Too many words make you a fool. When you make a promise to God, don't delay in following through, for God takes no pleasure in fools. Keep all the promises you make to Him. It is better to say nothing than to make a promise and not keep it. You know, and that's true in our to family and friends. You know, if you say it, do it. Don't let your mouth make you sin. Whew. And don't defend yourself by telling the temple messenger that the promise you made was a mistake. That would make God angry and He might wipe out everything you have achieved. Talk is cheap, like daydreams and other useless activities. Fear God instead. Pretty simple. Fear God instead. That's the third shortest verse, right? I mean, the second shortest. One, first one is Jesus wept. That might come in there as the fear God instead. So, what is worship? What does it mean to you to worship God? What does it mean? Everybody don't jump up at once.
To put Him first in my life.
It's not just coming in here.
No.
It's not.
It's 24 hours a day.
Yep.
It's continual.
Just being consciously aware constantly of God. And not just at devotional time, and not just at Sunday school time, and church service time, and Wednesday nights. It's all the time. Solomon advises us how best to approach the throne of God by watching our steps and our language. Be completely aware of every action you take, and take seriously what you say. So, that's kind of like, if you ain't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing at all. And because once you say it, it's out there. Ecclesiastes 5:1 gives us a good and excellent lesson. When you enter the house of God, ears open, mouth shut. So I want to share something with you that happened at another church on a Maundy Thursday during Easter season, and they had always had a Maundy Thursday service, and to me, that is one of the most reverent times of the year for me personally. You know, to go in and the way they did it, and they would make the sanctuary just be completely black, and you know, I mean, it was really good, and there were signs when you got there to come in and be worshipful and be quiet. And we went in there, and there was these little cliques over here, and they was chatting, and everybody was just like, it was Sunday visitation time, you know, or like fellowship time. And so we finally moved to give some people, without saying anything to them, we finally moved to another part of the church to keep them from disturbing us, because we were trying to get into the moment, you know. And so that made me think about that. Ears open, mouth shut. And I think it disturbed some other people, because after then, something must have been said. And because the next time that we had it, it was a lot different. The signs were bigger, you know, and everything. So, but to me, that's what it means: ears open, mouth shut. You know, you can do a lot more by just listening sometime and leaving your mouth closed. So, but that made me think about that, because it was not shut your mouth at that service that night. They were just, you know, too busy talking about other things. Prepare yourself for worship, and that, and keeping your ears open and your mouth shut can help you do that. Prepare yourself for worship, whether it's before you have your devotional, you know, just really give yourself a moment to understand and remember what you're about to do, that you're going before God, who created us, who's just awesome. How might your life and worship be different if you guarded every step you made and you didn't, you know, knee-jerk a lot? I do a lot of knee-jerking. You know? How might your life and worship be different if you guarded every step? Reverence for God is the foundation for worthwhile words and useful activities. Reverence for God is the same as fear God. Doesn't mean like be afraid of Him. Just revere Him. Respect Him for who He is and what He has done for us and what He's going to do for us. I mean, He is going to be willing to live with us for the rest of eternity and let us live in His house, you know. So, the other night on Family Feud, we watched that with Steve Harvey, you know. God, look, he's so funny. But one of the things was, it was like six answers, I think. And it was, what is the first thing, when you think about heaven, what's the first thing you think about or something, you know. And I kept saying,
what are you going to see when you get to heaven?
Yeah, or something. Yeah, what are you going to see when you get to heaven? You must watch it too.
Yeah.
But I kept saying, streets of gold. And finally, that was the one. They didn't get it, and the other family got it, you know. And I said, well, we know who goes to church then.
They never would say Jesus Christ.
I know. Well, see, because I don't think the family that was doing it, you know. I mean, that would have been my first answer,
well,
Jesus.
Yeah, finally, the mother did say, our Lord.
Yeah, she did, yeah. And but that, I kept saying, I told John, I said, straight to gold. old. So anyway, you know, because that's what he's working on for us now.
He's preparing it.
It's going to be nice because it's taking him a long time, isn't it? That's the way I look at it. So it's totally awesome that we are able to approach the one who loves us, who created us, and who gives us everything that we have, whether it's the pain, whether it's the frustration. He wants us to deal with it and move on. A part of being a follower of Christ is being obedient to him, to his will, his purpose for you. When we are in tune with him and we maintain a relationship with him that honors him, what's the next thing? Obedience. If we are in tune and in step with everything that we are supposed to be for him, then naturally we're just going to obey him. Just, it's just not, we don't even think about it. We don't have to say, well, should I do this or not? It just happens. Worship is a natural response. What keeps you from being completely obedient to God? Completely. Now, remember, we have to remember there are limitations on time as far as we are concerned. Because we're born and we die, and our limit of time is the space in between. So don't waste another moment not using your time for the glory of God. Cultivate true friendships. If you don't have one, cultivate one. People that you can rely on and they can rely on you. That's the most important thing. Find somebody that you can rely on and they can rely on you. And focus on God alone in your private and your public worship. It's easy in your private worship because it's just you and him. But in your public worship, sometimes it might be a little more difficult. So hone it in, keep your ears open and your mouth shut, and focus on him. Does anybody have anything they want to add? Questions, complaints, concerns?
Good lesson. She quit teaching and started walking on my toes.